One of the biggest things that my therapists have said to me over the years is, listen, know that if you're not comfortable with me, we can find you someone else. I'd rather be at least part of the process of finding someone with you that you feel will be more suitable or can assess more of your needs on a larger scale, whatever it is. I'd rather be helping you with that process than us sitting here in sessions and not being productive. And just knowing that any experience you gain can help you ask questions for the next person.
Instead of meeting those moments and being like, well, this isn't for me, it's meeting those moments and saying, what don't I like about this relationship? And how can I create a better one with someone else who can be my therapist and can fulfill the things that I need in my life, the like counseling, and really chart out the conversations that I need to have? Because I think some people, like myself, because I've done that before, like, oh, I don't like this person, I'm just going to stop. Welcome to season 2 and this episode of Not So Tiny Awakenings, where I, your host, Reagan Williams, share the mic with the guest, uncovering the tiny awakenings and life lessons they have learned along the way. In today's episode, I'm joined by my line sister, Mona Leah Smith. Mona has training in peer counseling and intervention. She has volunteered to assist with suicide hotlines and even has a near lifetime of experiences with therapy sessions, trauma counseling, and a mixed bag of techniques. So who better to talk to us about how to therapy? Whether you've never been on the metaphorical therapy couch or you're just having trouble finding the right therapist, you've come to the perfect place to figure out how to get the best bang for your buck or find free counseling services on your own. I want to start us off for folks who don't know you. How would you describe your why and what motivates you most?
I would say my why is always geared towards servicing others. Now, sometimes that has come to my demise, but so my why is always servicing others, and I don't think that will change, but what platform, where that is. I feel like over the years, it's been something different. And there's always been a no role too small type mindset for me.
Yeah.
So, and I'm definitely a homebody as well. So it's hard.
I don't know. I feel like some of the best things happen right at your house.
Very much so.
No, for real. It's good. I feel like there's always so much going on and there's always so many different crises. And I know there's so many issues in my community that I'm like, oh my God, where do I start? So we definitely share the passion of service. Mm-hmm. And I've just been rethinking and mulling over what that looks like in this chapter of my life. You know, it guided me into my, you know, 40-hour week job. But what have you done to fulfill that passion through your lived experiences as of late?
So I will say that kind of ties back to the what people call going ghost. When you like to service people, sometimes you forget to, you know, do a check engine light on yourself. And so part of my journey was kind of doing that, and it still is, and figuring out exactly what that means for me. So I've been doing a bit of that, exploring different avenues within like art, and really getting back to things I like sculpture and poetry. And then alongside that, of course, we have to make money to live. So I did find me a somewhat service-oriented job as an IRB associate coordinator. So that is just a fancy way of saying that for people that do research, I kind of help supervise that research by approving the people that are doing the research, making sure they are certified, and also within that research, there are different needs like translations, so we can have a diverse population within the research. And so just kind of like taken aback to have a somewhat hands-off approach with not being physically with people outside of my coworkers, just to kind of give myself time to recharge and just kind of focus also on other goals that I have.
Yeah, I'm huge on getting like that social rest to realign with self, because you do, and I love that you said that, like just checking your own engine lights, like checking in with yourself to ask yourself like, okay, well, what do I need? How can I service myself? And I've never been good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying my hardest. And I think part of that has been going to therapy. And that was like a huge decision for me that I've made a couple of times in my life. The first two times were psychiatrists, which they're there to, you know, prescribe you medicine. It was very clinical. Right. I hated it. I was like, this isn't what I'm really looking for. I really just want to like talk to someone. And then if we come to the conclusion that I need to be medicated, then we get there, right?
Right.
I tried again when I moved to Charlotte. I honestly was like, oh my God, this is like, do I have $300 worth of issues? Like to be like forking out to them. Like, I don't know. And it was so crazy because I would get sad and I'm like, is this worth $300?
Right. It's adding on to the problems.
Right. Now, going into this year, like, I've really just been like, okay, Reagan, you spend this money doing all different types of stuff, whether it's going to nice restaurants or getting a plane ticket, whatever. I just feel like, oh, this is the thing that's going to make me happy. It's like, no, well, let's think about your longevity with happiness, your relationship with this, like, emotion that you're looking for. And I think that's how, like, I've gotten, you know, I have a team now, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I've just kind of armored myself up with someone else who's keeping me accountable for that.
Mm-hmm.
So how have you been checking your engine light?
So for me, it's like you said, giving it a try. And I think when you tell people to give it a try, they think you mean like just one little go. And it goes back to the term I keep using, which is pivoting. Sometimes for people, pivoting is embarrassing. It's like whether you want to be a teacher and you get in there. And I'm sorry for the people that have kids, but some people realize they hate kids. And I think you would rather them not spend like 10 hours a day with your child if they realize they really hate children. And they just need to go and do something else. But that's hard because you've already told everyone and announced to everyone that you're a teacher and they've already supported you, or some people already doubted you. And so it's just kind of, when I think about myself and what I've wanted to do, first of all, accepting me for who I am, and knowing that that can change at any moment, and kind of being okay with things that I discover within, like journaling, because I've been journaling more, that are different than what I thought I would be doing at 26 years old. And then also for me, I have like a lot of trauma that has occurred throughout my life. And that's something too that people don't really like to dig too deep in, because it brings up a lot of emotions and stuff that can be very uncomfortable, very unsettling. But then it's kind of like, where do I go from here? And it's like you said, like, you need your team. You need your team. And that includes not just your friends. It doesn't include just what people define as the known medical professionals, like your primary care physician, but also can, and for me, I feel like it should include a therapist. And then, like you said, if you need a psychiatrist for those diagnoses that require medication, whether it be everyday or emergency medication, then going from there. And that's kind of what I had to do between 2019 to now. And that's a long time. People don't like to hear that, but it's the truth. And It's just like anything else. You just got to keep pivoting till you figure out something that works. And sometimes that even has to change as you get older. And it just comes with age.
And I hate to say this, sometimes it doesn't come with age, you know, like the willingness to discover and reintroduce yourself to yourself through your healing. And I tell people all the time, like the hardest thing for me in my evolution is letting go of the archetypes of who I thought I was.
Yeah.
Because I was identifying so much with my trauma. I was defining myself so much with my pain points and my baggage. And it's absolutely like beautiful that you've given yourself the grace, because it takes a lot of grace to discover and rediscover yourself, especially when you've put a lot of work behind the things that you thought you wanted. Like I've heard of people, you know, in their 40s, like they finally got the career that they wanted, because you used the teacher example. You finally get the career, the job title that you wanted, and they've realized like, oh my God, I don't like this. Watching people make that mistake, and I'm like, wow, the only thing that you are really looking for is to follow your passion, to find happiness in the things that you do 9 to 5. But that pivot away from what they thought it was is so much harder, because they worked years and years and years for it. They built a whole career around it, you know? So I'm saying this to you, and I'm hoping it for myself too, that I never stop giving myself that grace to pivot and to change and to, you know, reopen those closed books. Cause sometimes we like close a chapter and we think like it's over and done with. And sometimes it's like, no, like, really think about what your passions were, what made you the happiest. Mm-hmm. And maybe going back to that instead of letting life or the people around you tell you where you should be or what you should be doing. So you said a lot of beautiful things in that. Mm-hmm. I'm also recognizing that you mentioned some of the battles that people have trying to access mental health care. What do you think stops people the most?
I think lack of prior research is one of the foundational things that kind of stops people, because it can be overwhelming and you have to do your research. Even if you have no insurance, there are ways to either seek therapy that may be free, low to no cost. And then also within that, there are ways to do things that are therapeutic that work just as good. And some people kind of like those better. Mm-hmm. And there are just so many sites like Therapy for Black Girls, Zoodoc, Zen Care, where people just don't go and do their research first to kind of get like a taste. It's kind of like, you know, how we go in a store and someone, whether it be from, you know, TikTok is one of the biggest things. Somebody recommended this on TikTok, this protein powder. You go in there, you don't read anything about it. And then you get back home, you were thinking you're going to use it for weight loss. All of a sudden, you're gaining more weight. And this person didn't let you know, or you didn't watch the whole video, that it's actually for weight gain. It's kind of like one of those things. And that's how it works with therapy. You can't just go in there. Someone say, oh, I should see this. I'm a Black woman. I should go see this Black woman. That approach might not work for you. Also, she might not take your insurance. So now you're kind of in there like, oh, well, my friend said that. It doesn't matter. You have to do your own research. So that's just really a good foundation when it comes to there, and it kind of can help you not feel as, because it's going to be overwhelming, whether it's at the beginning, the middle, it's going to be overwhelming at different points. But that foundation gives you kind of a sense of like, okay, I'm kind of in control here as much as I can be. And I know that I can always resort back to one of these sites or apps or whatever to kind of get me where I'm trying to go. And know that wherever you think you're trying to go, it may be somewhere different once you actually get in there.
Yep. That might change. And I think some people get into therapy and they hear things that they don't want to hear, or they, like, mm-hmm. I use that analogy of, like, I'm trying to get to the longevity of happiness, but a lot of that is walking through your trauma, and that's sad and it's scary and it's like, it's hard, you know? So I've definitely seen people start therapy and the going gets rough, and like, this is your moment to start cracking the code, and they don't recognize it. They're just like, oh my God, my therapist is like identifying all this stuff in me, and I feel uncomfortable now. And it's like, yeah, growth is on the other side of that discomfort. So maybe even when the going gets rough, like, people are just like, oh my, like, what is this? When you're starting off, you're doing research, what should people be looking for?
I personally feel like they kind of should dig into their identity and their why. Mm-hmm. Now, as you stated, your therapist may uncover more or something different than why you initially went in. So, of course, you know, being open-minded to that. But dig into your identity, your why, and know that your why could literally be that it angers you when people don't close cabinets and you just kind of want to know what that stems from. It could be that simple. And then you get in there, all of a sudden, this lady or man or they, them, may be telling you and digging into you about why at 5 years old, your mom and dad were arguing over cabinets, and now that just traumatized you. It's funny, but it's like,
no,
it's,
that's
something
true,
that can
though.
Be that deep. Yeah. And now you upset about these cabinets, and it's just so much trauma there from something else that just blooms into something else, and that gets to the other uncomfortable part, which is not being afraid to ask questions, especially within your first visit. And I feel like the reason why that's hard is not just because people don't know what to ask. They're kind of afraid to ask questions because they're the professional. Yeah. And to you, you're not. But you are trying either to be the professional of yourself or to kind of gain insight on yourself that helps you discover more. And how can you discover more? Because just like when you meet people on the street, you might be with your friend that already knows you, and you meet someone else and you're like, they're not my cup of tea. That can happen with a therapist.
Yeah.
I can easily say to you as a friend, girl, I don't like your outfit, just like that. And the therapist could say, I feel like something else would suit you better. And you just don't like that. You just don't like that. So not being afraid to ask questions that will kind of start to dig into that a little early, and not being afraid to also, once you discover, this person's not suitable for me, the way they give information is not suitable to me. Because sometimes I will say people just don't like the feeling they get from someone kind of giving them insight on themselves. But also the way some people approach is not comfortable for other people. And that doesn't make them a bad therapist. It just doesn't fit you. Mm-hmm. And so you just kind of have to be okay with saying this doesn't work, and know that one of the biggest things that my therapists have said to me over the years is, listen, know that if you're not comfortable with me, we can find you someone else. I'd rather be at least part of the process of finding someone with you that you feel will be more suitable or can assess more of your needs on a larger scale, whatever it is. I'd rather be helping you with that process than us sitting here in sessions and not being productive. And just knowing that any experience you gain can help you ask questions for the next person that will kind of let you know, okay, yeah, I don't think this is going to work out. And it is kind of scary. I've been there before. I've been with people that are not the same race as me. And I'm kind of like, okay, you're not understanding like my beef with how someone was talking to me and how I felt like it was a microaggression in the workplace.
Right.
And I had to say, like, this is a huge part of my identity at this moment. She might have been good for me when this was not pressing. But right now, at this moment, this is a huge part of my identity. And I really need someone that can do this. And that's how I found someone else that I really like. That was my girl. That was my homegirl that became my therapist. And then she stopped accepting my insurance. But then we found another lady where I was like, see, now you're my new homegirl. So it's just pivoting and pivoting and pivoting and just kind of knowing what to ask. And within the next few years, this person may not even be fitting or they might change their insurance policies. It's annoying. But it's something that when you're trying to take care of yourself, just like when you move and you need a new doctor, you just have to go out there and put yourself out there and do it. Because your health comes first. You won't be here if you're not in good health.
And your mental health, too. Like when I was contemplating like how much money I should be spending, I wasn't looking for other resources. I eventually, you know, started doing BetterHelp. Got a therapist there. Didn't really like my therapist. I felt like I liked her as a person. I felt like we could be friends.
That's one of the worst feelings.
Yeah, that's the worst feeling. I'm like, oh my goodness. Because I'm like, why am I at the top of the call? Why am I consoling you? Why do I know exactly where you live, where your husband is? Like, I was like, this is too much. This is too much and not enough at all. And instead of meeting those moments and being like, well, this isn't for me, it's meeting those moments and saying, what don't I like about this relationship? And how can I create a better one with someone else who can be my therapist and can fulfill the things that I need in my life, the like counseling, and really chart out the conversations that I need to have? Because I think some people, like myself, because I've done that before, like, oh, I don't like this person, I'm just going to stop. And then I go into my little hood therapy techniques and I start trying to be my own therapist, which is fine. I think, and by fine, I really just mean like doing some of the self-discovery work helped me even identify more what I was looking for in a therapist. But not leaving that idea, that whole idea behind, like, don't trash it. You went to begin with for a reason, and that reason has not changed just because of this other external person. You talked about the cabinets, which is so funny because it was funny to me because it's not like it's we all have triggers, right?
Right.
And that was a trigger. A trigger is a symptom. It is not a diagnosis. And I think sometimes people meet their triggers or someone presses their buttons. That's another way of saying it. Somebody presses those buttons and they think, oh, well, this is the thing that I really have beef with. This is the thing I really have a problem with. And it's like, no, because if that happened to almost anybody else, somebody else like slammed the cabinets, yeah, we might be like, okay, what's going on with them? But we wouldn't personally take it, you know, as like harsh, and it's not bringing up all these other things in us. So I think also being just open to the feedback, like you said, of like the things that you hear, you know, and not trying to self-diagnose, like not going in with all of these, because I had went through my little hood therapy and my therapist that I have now, we were talking and I put her through a whole interview. The first session,
as you should.
I really did. I kind of grilled her a little bit, but I was just like, you know, here are my problems. Are these things that you feel like, you know, you've had practice talking through with other people? I'm like getting to know her, what she thinks about, you know, psychology as a field. It's something that I studied in undergrad and I'm thinking about going back to school, not for clinical, but, you know, elsewhere. And so I have my own critiques. And, you know, I'm like talking to her through all these different things. And she was like, oh my goodness. She's like, I don't think anybody has ever really talked through my practice with me the way that you just have. And I was like, yeah, I spent a lot of time on my own thinking about what I needed from someone like you. Mm-hmm. And it really has led me to someone who's absolutely amazing. And I will say, I feel like I'm a pretty niche person. The things that I was looking for in her were pretty niche, you know, mm-hmm. and it was just like one thing after another. I'm like, oh my God, you believe in this? And oh, we can take personality tests. And like, you want to know my chart and all this other things like that some other people might not care about, some other therapists might not care about. And yeah, one thing after another, like we just got it. We just hit it off. And she was like, one thing about, you know, trying to do a lot of the work on your own, you can eventually become rigid and think you have fully, like I said, like gone to the point of diagnosing mm-hmm. triggers and symptoms instead of getting down to what's unhealed and what's actually wounded, and being open to the process of hearing that, no matter who it comes from. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not here for the, like, just throw your therapist away because they told you something that's like, mm-hmm. like, let's not do that. But yeah, like just knowing when to pivot and when the relationship has run out does not mean the therapy has run out. Right. So if you're at a point where you've done the research, you've, you know, kind of done some self-assessment to see who you'd like to be your counselor, because like you said, it depends on your problems. Sometimes those demographic questions of like who your therapist is and what identities they hold is going to matter to you, because sometimes that's where your trauma is carried, right? Mm-hmm. You've done that, you've found someone, you've kind of gone through that initial couple of sessions, you're vibing with them. What are people supposed to be getting out of therapy?
So I'll start off by saying, like, I feel like you need at least 3 sessions to kind of assess that this is going to be a good therapeutic relationship that you're developing. Uh-huh. And once you figure out, okay, I like her, I like him, I like them, this is great. Going from there, I feel like as you're in your sessions, it goes back to being transparent. One thing that always comes up for people that are kind of anti-therapy is that, oh, you can go in there and say anything. And you can, and people will. And I feel like, you know, on one hand, that if you're really going in there and you're trying to be assisted, that, like you said, with the open mind comes the feedback. And sometimes the story that you tell may be missing a few details that are pertinent. And depending on your therapist, they might kind of catch on that. They might ask questions. And those questions might even trigger a person. Because some people don't like to be in a session where it feels like they're kind of being attacked mm-hmm. in a way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when you're in your sessions, keeping that open mind that I am here for my betterment, even if that means that in some way or shape or form, which we all are in some way, shape or form, I am the villain. I am the villain. You could be telling a story about a situation that occurred maybe with a friend or something, and your therapist might ask you a question of, well, why did you say it that way to them? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you like sit back for a second, like, I just told you, you know, she was blah, 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 blah. And they might just kind of dig deeper than that. And you kind of figure out like, oh, wow, I've been kind of beefing with this friend for a long time. It kind of goes back to what you said about realizing people just are not your cup of tea, and that underlying like uncomfortableness and just your identity being shredded can make you kind of, whether it be resentment build up or you just look at yourself like, who am I? Are people on the other side of like, oh, she thinks she too good for us? And it's sometimes it's never really any of that at all. It's just like, we don't fit, you guys. We don't fit. So when you're in your therapy sessions, being aware that these people are licensed to kind of pick up on certain things. And even alongside that, some people don't realize how isolated they've been from their triggers. And that's always a fun one because when you're isolated from your triggers, whether you're the one bringing it up or your therapist is kind of the one bringing it up or saying something, you have to be able to know when too much is too much. But also know that they might notice from your body, whether you're in person or teletherapy, they might notice from your body language, how you start to speak. You know, some of us are criers. I'm a crybaby. there is too much. It's too much for you, or you may know. And we don't want to over-trigger you. That can lead to other things. So that's one thing while you're in therapy, just kind of being aware of, because guess what? You're going to go in a real world and you're going to start to notice those things, being conscientious of your body. And another thing I always say to people is, if your therapist give you homework, do it. Do it. Whether it's journaling, whether it's a version of art therapy. I know some people do better with art therapy, whether it's meditation or breathing exercises. Do it. You need to do it. That is like a prescription. If you had an infection and you had to take antibiotics, I would hope that you would take. I can't even say that people would take them because they don't. They say take the whole 10 days. Some people are like, oh, day 8, I feel better, I'm good. Though you need to keep doing this because it's a daily practice. Healing is not a linear one-way street. It's more like a roller coaster that you just cannot get off of. And so do your homework. And as you're doing your homework, pay attention to your body. And also just like, if that fits you, some people don't like journaling or they don't like writing to journal. And they don't realize, oh, I can do this with the recording, or I can journal with ask the journal some way within my session. People don't realize like you can kind of ask those questions to get what you need out of these sessions. Therapy may open up to other things. One thing you mentioned at the beginning of the conversation was medication. And as a spiritual Black person, I grew up in church, and that was like, oh, no, medication? No, you don't need it. Just pray. And that is not the case. That is not the case. People take Advil, ibuprofen. Some people take that every day, but they draw the line at a medication that will basically stabilize the different hormones that go through their stomach and go and attach and kind of create that brain response that we need, which is, like you said, longevity to happiness. People don't realize that that's needed for some people. It may be needed every day. It may be needed on emergency type of diagnosis. I know for me in 2019, I was very sick, and it came from over time not taking care of myself. I had got pneumonia a couple times, and my body was just like, hey, you're doing too much. And it kept telling me. And that illness kind of like for me physically really messed up everything to the point where my mental just was really not good. And I started seeing a trauma therapist and just kind of like also working on my health trauma, because that pneumonia developed from a lot of doctors seeing a Black woman in pain and being like, she'll be all right. She's fine. Just give her a Z-Pak. Just give her this. And just being dismissed and having, yeah. I still have like a lot of health trauma that I'm still working through. But just noticing that I needed other versions of therapy, but also that I needed emergency medication, because sometimes it was hard to go outside once like 2020 came, where it's like, I've already been deathly sick. And now y'all talking about it's a virus out here that y'all don't know what to do in regards to this virus. So that just really can drive you up a wall. And yeah. I think people always think that everything is permanent, and it's not. It's not yeah. permanent. I've worked through that pretty well. And I've also been involved in other versions of therapy, like EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. Mm-hmm. But just going and learning about those different things and knowing that, you know, it's not a one size fits all, but it's not just you anymore battling, whether you like right. to call them demons, battling your own mind, whatever mm-hmm. you like to call it, it's not just you anymore. And it's not just you and a friend or you and your parents. It's you and a licensed professional that nice. Is there to help you, whether it's help you find someone else that can help you or to help you attack some goals, and those may change and you can go from there.
Mm-hmm. Wow, you said so much. And I heard so much of the, you know, my parents just told me to pray about it or pray on it. I heard so much of that when I started my collegiate organization, Mental Health Melanin. And we were talking to other, you know, Black and Brown students about their own mental health issues and traumas. And that came up all the time. I wish I had the verbiage to kind of explain it the way that you did, and taking care of your body, you're taking care of your mind in the same or similar way, in similar mm-hmm. fashion. What is so important is also you talked about, kind of like this refusal sometimes to pivot yourself from being the hero and the villain yep. or villain and a bystander or, mm-hmm. you know, like I've definitely had to sit with myself on that one. I mean, maybe over the last like 5 years and just ask myself like, wow, where I am the villain in a lot of people's story, whether I like to realize that or not. Whether that was intentional or not, I've hurt people's feelings. I've done right. something wrong. I am not a perfect angel. I'm not God. Understanding and accepting your own complexity and what has contextualized you to be you helps to absorb what people say to you, the feedback that you get just in general. And then also like interrogating that context, right? Like, oh, like it's my responsibility. I'm the only thing on this earth that I can control. It's my responsibility mm-hmm. to take myself out of circumstances that aren't, I mean, especially as an adult, that aren't fueling me in a positive way. And I don't know, I've thought about how much time like I've spent by myself untriggered. mm-hmm. Like, we were talking as soon as we got on, like, you know, we haven't talked in a while, but I'm like, okay, a lot of people can say that about me being isolated from your triggers. I've spent a lot of time sitting back and intellectualizing and, you know, conceptualizing and contextualizing my experiences and who I am. But it's scary, like going back into practice and exposure. Like, you spend like a year, you know, a lot of people are on this, like, you need to go heal. Like, you need to stop dating. Mm-hmm. You need to go heal, which mm-hmm. I do think you do need the time to sit down and think about, well, what role did I play in that relationship? And how can I play a better role in the next one? Or what role did this other person play? Am I looking, are there negative things that I've told myself are positive that I'm actually looking for in my partners?
Right.
Are there trends, and am I trending towards a certain way? It's good to sit back mm-hmm. and like ask yourself those questions, but when you go back out there, it's a practice and exposure. Just because you sat with yourself does not mean it's not going to be hard when those things are presented to you again. So yeah, like my mind went down so many different avenues as you were talking about what it means to actually sit in the process of therapy. You talked about transparency. You talked about, you know, kind of storytelling, narrative, the narrative that we have about ourselves, the narratives that we have about what therapy is and isn't. What do you feel like people usually do wrong? What are we really in therapy to do?
I feel like one of the biggest things in the world that we do wrong is thinking that we go to therapy and it's because we have a mental disorder only, or even within that, there are people that are like feeling like, so I have this specific problem. And it's kind of like you said, where you can go into therapy and something else totally comes up. And people forget that it goes back to healing not being linear. And so in your practice of healing, your maintenance can be different. Sometimes you may just need to do a check-in once a year, kind of assess what your needs are in regard to therapy. And sometimes it's like, wow, this year really threw me for a loop and you need to process. So now you're back at like maybe like twice a month or something. That's just kind of between you and your therapist. But I think one of the biggest things people have an issue with when it comes to in regards to therapy is just thinking about who all goes. One thing Black people like to say is, who all gonna be there? And so it's kind of like that. People are skeptic about therapy because they think about who all gonna be there. And so if you have some person that in your head, you're like, oof, they a narcissist. Because, you know, that was thrown out so much between 2020 and now. Too many people online not knowing they talk about. But it's like, you don't really know if they're a narcissist, but they can get therapy too. They can. There are literally therapists that are NPD therapists, full name narcissistic personality disorder therapists. And they kind of help the person know their tendencies and regulate their emotions. I had a family member that had to be put through that. And I can't tell them how that's done. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell them what their progress looks like. That's between them and their therapist.
Yeah.
So kind of refraining from associating yourself with other people's therapy and their healing, and concerning yourself with how can I go in the session and make it the best for me?
Yeah.
You can go in there with a, you know, a victim mindset, as they call it, and you're actually the narcissist, which is often what narcissists do. They are the victim. But your therapist saying to you or diagnosing you with narcissistic personality disorder, it's not one of the most accepting, fun things.
Right.
So it's kind of realizing where you have to go from there, how that looks for you on your path of healing and how that roller coaster is going to go for you from there. And I feel like that's uncomfortable. But it's like something that is needed. It's something that's needed. And just knowing that if this person doesn't feel like they're guiding you or you're not accepting of them, seeking, you know, a new person or a new form of therapy. Because like I said, there are several different forms. And then also like what you do at home for maintenance is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Another point I wanted to touch on was just how addiction plays into people's needs when it comes to therapy. I know like a popular thing now are the little vape pens.
Oh my goodness, yes.
But even amongst that, alcohol and stuff, I think for people of all age groups, but especially within our age group, it's more acceptable to be out here having wild young adult fun.
Yeah.
And people associate as such. They don't say, oh, that's my friend with the drinking problem. They say, oh, that's my girl. She can throw down. She can drink,
she
y'all.
Party, yeah. She'll drink you under the table. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
At a house and home. But is she okay? Mm-hmm. Is she okay? But then something very traumatic happens to their friend, whether it be one person car wreck or they take their own life, which, you know, we often don't like to think or talk about that one. Just those kind of things. And you're like, oh, how could I have been there for that person? And it all boils down to how could they have been there for themselves? Because if someone is in that state of mind, a lot of times it's not much of anything we can do at all for them. It's not really much that can change their mind from us. We're only human. But one thing you can do is help them help themselves. And so just also realizing your friend with the narcissistic tendencies can see a therapist too. And also maybe you should jump off the judgmental boat and join the therapy boat with them.
Yep.
And learn not only how to be better for yourself, but also this is someone that I want to keep in my life. Narcissist or not, how can I work to have a healthy relationship with them? Because they are human. They do deserve to have friends, whether you believe it or not. They do deserve to have a therapist that cares for them, believes them,
right,
can help them with their trauma, all of that. And when your paths cross again, maybe you both will be able to kind of help each other and drop a little gem.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're learning from that narcissistic friend. Now you're learning from that drink you under the table friend that has turned their life over. And it's like, I don't need that drink to cope with the everyday life that I'm living.
Yeah.
I don't need that vape to be able to work these 40-hour weeks, 50-hour weeks, 60-hour weeks, because they keep getting longer and longer.
They do.
These days.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
It's very, very important to, I think the biggest thing about therapy is the open-mindedness.
Yeah. Mm. And that, like, empathy and compassion over judgment internally and externally is everything. All right, you ready for these rapid fire questions? Okay, what's your favorite thing about therapy?
I would say the realizations of the things that you didn't even know were there. I know for me, like, one thing I am just now learning, this is new, that I am the isolation queen. And it kind of goes back to what me and you talked about before, just realizing that I am the villain in people's story because of that. Because it's like, oh, she just stopped talking to me, or she don't talk to me. And it's like, I'm here, y'all. I'm just in my bubble. Call me. But I am the isolation queen. I do not like to be triggered. I like to be avoidant as possible. But I am working on that trauma, but it's been one of the greatest realizations in therapy because I feel like it will help me develop better, long-lasting friendships and be more open.
What are your therapist must-haves?
I have to have someone that is trauma-centered, someone that is able to give that homework when it comes to like journaling, but I prefer a woman just because there are some things that for me make me more comfortable. And then the last thing for me always is I need someone that is willing to tell me how it is. I don't like a lot of sugar. I always say to the therapist, I need my coffee black. I need it straight.
I don't do well when you're like trying to find out a nicer way to say this. If it's mean, you can give it to me like that and I'm fine. I'm like that with my friends too. Doesn't work for everyone that way, but that's how it works for me.
What's made you switch therapist? One example.
I've had a therapist that thought I was the therapist. She was very nice. It's just that she thought I was the therapist. One session, I was talking about something trauma related, and she started crying. And she started talking about how that triggered her, and she had to leave the office. So I think we both knew, your baby. It's a wrap. But I love her. Shout out to her. But you know, sometimes that's a pivot. That's a pivot, y'all. And that's okay. Don't give up.
Right. What's one of your therapist icks?
When the therapist can't like read the room, that goes to empathy. So someone that is just not able to like say if like I'm crying or something, and you still trying to dig into whatever we were digging into, and you're like triggering me more. Mm-hmm. That's an ick for me. Mm-hmm. And I call them side eyes. And once I hit that side eye, it's like, oh, you know, it might be a red flag, number one. But if you have other ones, that's like, okay, let's go ahead and figure something else out.
Bombastic side eye.
Exactly.
What helps you be transparent and your most honest self during therapy sessions?
From not being transparent initially, I've been doing therapy from a very young age. I lost my parents. I went through a lot of trauma, whether it was from foster care or just from school and stuff. So I've been in therapy for quite some time now. And so during that time, like, I didn't feel like I could be transparent. I remember one of my therapists was my guardian's therapist as well. And I was like, there's no way she's not going and telling her what I'm talking about in this session. So I just was not transparent, but I was still noticing how I was feeling the same. And I was tired of feeling that way. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know what? Let me not only do my research and find someone that I feel may be comfortable for me. Let me be open to being more transparent and giving them a chance to kind of dig into this with me. And they may not be a fit, but at least I did it and I learned from it. So I can go and pivot to whether it be a new therapist or figuring out another type of therapy I might need, because sometimes I might be in the wrong type of therapy. Not everybody needs cognitive behavioral therapy. But just noticing that if I'm transparent, I can really get those needs met.
What types of therapy are you aware of?
So one I just mentioned was cognitive behavioral therapy. Then also there's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. And that's a fancy word of just saying that throughout the trauma, kind of recentering that trauma to not feel how it feels in that moment and channeling it into something different. EMDR is a trauma-centered therapy. Also, there's ECT, electric shock therapy. I know for that one, it's mainly centered around people with depression, but it's said to be helpful for some. There's also art therapy. Art looks different for people, and you don't have to be necessarily what you consider to be quote-unquote good at art. I know for me, I prefer poetry, but I also like sculpture. But I cannot paint to save my life. So art therapy looks different, and there are literally people that are art therapists. It's not just, oh, I'm in my room, I got an easel. You know, it can be, you know, balling on a budget. But that grief therapy, like I said, I've lost my parents, and you know, talking to one therapist about what's going on at work, may not necessarily help the cycle of grief I'm in. It may feel a little bit heavier sometimes within the year. I know for me, this year was really hard. And my birth sister and I kind of talked about it at the beginning of this year, how bad it was like affecting me. And that may be something like you need to add, like a little add-on, you know, like they have when you shopping online, little add-on in the cart. Add in a grief therapist. Sometimes that looks like it's with a group, maybe one-on-one, but just adding that on. And maybe your regular therapist might be licensed to tap into that too. Sometimes we need family therapy. Now, that's kind of hard to gather the family up, but sometimes we do need family therapy. Family does look different for people. Another therapy is identity related therapy. Within these past few years, there have been a lot of like breakthroughs when it comes to people's different identities, but that doesn't make it less uncomfortable. I think at some points it made it even more uncomfortable for people. So just knowing that there's someone out there that literally is licensed and trained to do that.
Right.
Because please know that your cognitive behavioral therapist may not be trained to do all these things. And a lot of times they have on their site which therapies they specifically are trained to do.
Yeah, you brought up grief therapy, which is very interesting. A lot of us go through grief and don't think to get help. And I feel like it's so underutilized. And I know some people who've been in grief therapy for years now because they still have those moments. I mean, the holidays come around or a birthday or totally underutilized. What's been most rewarding in your experience of getting therapy?
Being more open to the pivot. I didn't necessarily have my life mapped out, but I had my career mapped out. And that's all I focused on. That's it. I didn't care about any romantic relationships. I always tried to be a good friend, but all in all, I was about my business. So just pivoting from that and realizing like there's more to me and I want to figure that out. And I've started to figure that out, started to figure out like what kind of relationships I don't want to have, what kind of relationships are no longer serving me, kind of realizing different parts of my identity has been rewarding and kind of pivoting from what I thought I was doing and being more open to some of the hobbies that I picked up within my trauma, like poetry. I only did that in times of grief or times of triggers and stuff, and realizing like my poetry is more than that. And brainstorming ideas of what I want to do with it in the future. So that's been neat and very rewarding because I never saw that as something that can even possibly in the future be lucrative.
That's beautiful. What do our therapists need from us?
Number one, they need you to be honest with them. And that includes like letting them know, like, this does not fit. And, you know, like I said, I would say at least 3 sessions. But like, you know, even if in that second session, you're like, oh, no. Being okay with letting them know and like them helping you and not being afraid to like interview them. Like you've even said, like you interviewed someone. It is an interview. This is a person that you're adding to your care team. This is a person that you might be paying out of pocket sum of money that you haven't added to your budget. So just like any other service, you want to get a high quality service. And the last thing, they really need you to go in there with an open mind about things.
What's made you keep going back?
I would say knowing that this is not just about me.
The biggest part of therapy is me, but I am a human in this world, and I want to try to be someone that is helpful to others. And in order to be helpful for others, you have to think about how you make them feel, how to process things that other people say, and just know that sometimes things people do are not intentional. And if you have a therapist, it's easy to kind of process them without processing it with the person. And so that's just really drawn me back, knowing that not only am I like taking care of myself and my own internal feelings, emotions, and battles, but also I'm able to go out in the world and either be triggered or be in situations where, you know, maybe I trigger another person, and being able to be in the moment and be like, my apologies about that, and just able to carry that conversation where it needs to go, versus, you know, older versions of myself would have been like, well, you deserved it, you know? So there's reward in knowing that you're bettering yourself as a person. I noticed a lot this year that some people feel like people don't deserve that. And I just 100% will always stand on, it doesn't matter what they deserve. What do you deserve? Do you want to be a good person? Do you want to be the better you? Because the focus is you. But what lasting impression do you want to leave? And I'd rather mine not be the person that made people feel bad because I overly spoke, I overly stepped on toes. I'd rather be known as someone that was able to accept her flaws, but also work on them.
What advice would you give to a therapy skeptic?
Focus on yourself. That's the main thing. I feel like a lot of skeptics are focused on other people. Even the underlying thought of skepticism is a focus on something else you've heard, someone else's experience, people that you know. It all boils back to someone else. And I feel like if you focus on yourself and you go in there, leave behind what grandma may have said, whether she was a church-going woman or not, leave behind what that one person you know that you like, there's no way they get anything out of their sessions. Leave behind your thoughts on medication, because if you're going to a cognitive behavioral therapist and they're trying to prescribe you medicine, I mean, I would tell you to leave. Go find someone else, because that's not their job. That's the psychiatrist's job. Still being open-minded that those things may come up, and knowing that all these things can be uncomfortable, but the focus is yourself, not what you've seen, heard, and felt by the way of others.
Okay, I love that. As we wrap up, what do you want listeners to take away from our conversation today?
Therapy, just like you do with your regular doctor, there's three different approaches when it comes to how I think about the doctor. When I go see my primary care physician, I may be going in for an acute problem. And that just means that, say, I broke my arm and they have to help me get a cast and all of that. And then I'm fine. Acute. It's just like it sounds. a cute little problem is what I like to call it. you know, we go through a cute little breakup that was not so cute.
Right.
you need to go in and you're like, listen, Linda, I am feeling terrible. And just letting them know. Then there might be a chronic problem. A lot of people with autoimmune illnesses know that that's a common chronic problem where you know, say if you got arthritis, some days are better than others.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, like, this is something that I've learned that I've bit into, because sifting through trauma is not easy. And then also grief as well. And the last one I say, and this is for people that feel like their life is just always so great, is when you have your insurance, especially when you got your insurance, you better use it. You go in to your primary care physician for a yearly checkup. Some people call it a physical still, even though that's commonly related to sports. But, you know, you're going for a yearly checkup, especially as you get older, because that yearly checkup, it includes like different screenings like cancer and stuff. That applies. All of these apply to therapy. Sometimes you just need that checkup. That's for, you know, anyone that feels like, I don't really need a therapist. You may go in for that yearly checkup and realize, woof, my check engine light is on. Just like you can, people go all the time to the doctor and they realize that they've been having hypertension.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've had a friend where they've had a loved one end up having heart failure. And they learned that from their yearly checkup.
Wow.
And so you learn so much when you go into therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And within all those different, you know, the acute, chronic, or just the checkup, you may discover that more is there for you to dig into and being open to that.
Yeah.
So that's really my takeaway, knowing that healing is not linear and everyone deserves to heal and it looks different. Some people say, oh, that's a first world problem. Well, if she or he want to cry about them feeling like they don't have enough shoes, by golly, let them. That's what they want to go on their sessions and do. Let them. That's mm-hmm. what they need it for. Let them. You never know what that means for them, because it looks different for everyone.
Yeah, it's a blessing to have first world problems. And they're still mm-hmm. problems of their own. And that's what I feel like that's what we're all seeking towards. I want everybody to have first world problems. I want everybody mm-hmm. to, like, have healed and gotten through. And, you know, life is gonna life, no matter what you have mm-hmm. or what circumstances surround you today. You know, it doesn't, tomorrow's still coming. But yeah, that's compassion, Grace, thank you so much for teaching us a little bit about how to therapy. We went through every stage from beginning to the end, from research to processing to shifting and pivoting. So thank you so much, Mona.
Of course, it was so nice to join you. And thank you for hitting me up about this.
Looking for additional resources? Check out this episode's show notes. I'm going to list all the websites that Mona listed or gave us, and maybe some new ones. Investing in yourself really might take some monetary investment and some time investment to find the right services for you, but we deserve it. Thank you for listening to this episode all the way through. If you enjoyed it, please rate and review the show wherever you listen to Tiny Awakenings.